Welcome to the 365 Mrs. Cinta Show. This morning we've got a bunch of stuff to go through, including some advisories around COVID-19, and headline around OneDrive Sync and version history. Roll it.
The following episode was recorded live on YouTube. Check out our website at messagecenter.show for all of our episodes. Stay tuned to the end of this episode for an audio podcast exclusive interview.
Welcome to the 365 Message Center Show, where we help you plan for change, prevent or fix, and stay informed. That's three things there, right there. Welcome Suzanne, Phil, Sarah, and others who have chimed in the chat. We do encourage you to get in there and discuss various things. Good now to you, Daniel.
Hello. Good afternoon. Here from Nashville, the home of some very bad storms this past week. So we're actually recovering from some pretty strong tornadoes that went through the Middle Tennessee area, not just Nashville. Actually, the hardest hit area was just east of here in a city called Cookeville, was pretty hit pretty hard. So we are doing recovery efforts and having time for, you know, volunteers to cut up trees and all that kind of stuff. So the cleanup will happen. It'll take a few weeks to even get power, I think, to some people. So it's wow. Been pretty hard.
Yeah, the disasters and bad weather like that, or terrible weather like that, when it hits out utilities like power, it really shows our reliance on things. We get a similar kind of thing happening. It makes me think of when it's really heavy snowfall and it might snap power lines, and people are relying on that for keeping warm.
Well, keeping warm and you know, if you think about medical devices that need power and all this kind of stuff. So it's been a tough week for a lot of people, and I know a few people that have been pretty affected by this, and so it's been tough. But I know we'll make it through, and there's been a few deaths associated with the storms too. So anyway. So you know, if you have if you're local and you would like to help out, Hands On Nashville is an organization that is helping out with boots on the ground, as they say, to not only put money in, but it's how you can volunteer to be involved. So anyway, thank you for letting me talk about that. Appreciate it.
No problem. It's good to rustle up support wherever you can. Yeah, let's get into it. There are a few things to talk about. I know that this message sort of sneaked in. Maybe it was an update near the end of Tuesday. We have update available for Office 365 Pro Plus, the monthly channel, MC205277. We did talk about it on Tuesday's show, and there was a change to the message, but I don't really see. Do you see the change in it?
I do not. It was just updated, so I don't see the change. I can't tell. Yeah,
they might have had something more to add to the list of features that were updated. It did look a little light for Office for a month.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Check that out. And as their advice goes for Office Pro Plus, if you're on an automatic updates scenario, via the content distribution networks, then no problem. It'll take care of that. But if you need to download it yourself, then you know the drill.
That's right.
This next one around Microsoft Authenticator update, or app rather. It is different, as you can see from the screenshot, how it's going to operate, or at least people's experience of that app. This is the updated feature. The Microsoft Authenticator app shows full screen account pages, MC205513. I'm in the thick of MFA rollouts in parallel with mailbox migrations for one large customer. It is quite a change, especially for people who don't read their email or pick up on every other way that we try to tell them, whether it be leadership or lift posters or whatever. And, oh, hello, I'm working from home, but now I can't. I wasn't in the office to enroll MFA. Well, there's a further change, and just for those on the podcast, it is a change to the UI, apart from color changes. But you'll see that once what used to display on the MFA app was rolling codes and a list of all the accounts that you might have attached to MFA. Now, if you want to see any of that, you have to tap through that account to a full screen where you can see the rolling code.
I think I understand why there's some of this change. Because if you have more than just a rolling code, you can have more information about, you know, getting in. I don't know about you, though. When I use an authenticator app, I just open it up, see my number, type in my number, and I'm done, right? Mm. If that's what I'm doing. You know, it's gotten a lot better, the authenticator app, with working seamlessly with your apps on your phone. So if that's how it's working, it's fine, right? Mm. And as well as prompts, you know, when you log in, it says, go check your authenticator app. All you have to do is click approve and you're done. So for those that, though, where you're just having to see, you know, those numbers cycling, I mean, that's kind of how I use authenticator app other than what I just described. I will say I agree. I think there's been a lot of improvements with the authenticator app, and I'm really loving how it's just seamless. Like I log in, my phone goes ding. I have to do my thumbprint, you know, on my device and click approve, and on I am. You know, I don't have to type in anything. It's great.
Mm. I started to think it was because they didn't want you to expose all these rolling codes if you've got them, that you have yet another step. But we're not using, or we don't even recommend necessarily that being the first option for MFA. We go with a push notification in the app and a SMS message as a backup. Or for some who are still using Casio calculators for phones.
Yes.
No, seriously, man. There's definitely still people that have the good old Nokia 3310 that bounces off the ground, and you know it's a good backup phone. Yep. So you have to receive it via
somewhere in here.
It's probably a doorstop, right? It's keeping your door from. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yep. So that's a change to the app, and it's rolling out to end users test flight now. Beginning to roll out to iOS customers mid-March and Android later this US spring. I just thought I'd put in the locality.
Good job.
There.
Yeah. Yes. I was wondering if you're going to do that.
How about this one? Microsoft 365 preparedness for COVID-19 coronavirus guidance regarding best practices for Microsoft Teams. At MC205458, what was your first thoughts when you started to scan through this, Daniel? Is it an important message for everyone to read?
I felt like a short answer.
Yep.
I think the longer answer here is, I think it's good to give, this seems like a message that administrators might need to have in their back pocket for when their leadership says, wait, aren't we using the cloud? And how is Microsoft keeping that stuff running? Mm. You know, with I hear Microsoft sending all their employees home, you know, and they're not letting them work. That's
from
not
the
true,
office.
Right? But right. But, you know what I mean? Hey, I hear Microsoft people are not even going in the office. How are they keeping our data secure? This seems like a message that, like I said, maybe you keep it in your pocket and you pull out and say, well, actually, here's how they're responding. Here's what they're doing. I think and as well as most large organizations and service-oriented organizations are communicating things about this, a new strain of the coronavirus, of a coronavirus that is highly contagious, and so they're really trying to put people's mind at ease about their services and how you can interact with them. So I think it's an okay message. I don't know that it's a major update, but okay. And I'm okay with it, but like I said, I think it's just an informational, just, you know, make sure you keep this in your back pocket.
Yeah. Well, look, let's go through a bit of this message. So it is, for the most part, at the beginning of the message, giving us some comfort that Microsoft have things in hand. They do have a plan for these sorts of events for their own business continuity so they can continue to offer services for us. There is a PDF that they link through to, which the interesting thing with this, let's just flick over, is that you have to agree to or sign into and agree to something of an NDA to read it. So as we click on through and we've signed in using, where is it? There we go. PDF has come down. And it's something that it feels like it is kept up to date in terms of what they are currently running at. There's a greeting there from someone important. but yeah, mission
for
someone important, someone with a signature on there. The program itself, and then getting into the methodology about how they have continuity plans. But I remember somewhere down here there was a table, wasn't there? Maybe this has changed. I thought I saw something where it had like a list of this is how we're currently running right now.
I don't remember seeing that.
I'm wondering if it's another one of those cases where you have something that links differently for the mobile app versus that. But anyway, as Daniel said, keep that in your back pocket for the report, or rather for having an answer for something. Summary there. And as we get down into actions you can take, because this is two-part message. This is Microsoft's own preparedness for continuity, and then actions you can take. And this is something that we've seen come up certainly more as we keep our eyes open for the community too. The guidance around how to enable or start to set up services to help you if you need to plan for business continuity and send people home suddenly.
Yeah.
Certainly centering around Microsoft Teams, isn't it, Daniel?
It is. And I think for organizations, this is something that really hasn't been tried recently, at least in the U.S. I know there are some parts of the world that have to deal with things like this coming up frequently. So I don't want to say this is something that's never happened, but it is something that a lot of organizations in the U.S. have not had to deal with, of what if we need to close our doors? We need to still function, but what if we can't allow people to come to work because of this contagion? And so I think the people working remotely, I think Teams is well positioned to enable that. I also think, though, for organizations that have not done a true user adoption activities with Teams, they're going to struggle, at least at the very beginning, of because this is so quick. You know, people are, if you've not been working and you haven't been in Teams and using it on a daily basis, and you haven't really engaged people, I'm not talking just training is part of it, but really engaged people of how they should be using it, then it could be problematic for you and your organization to get up to speed quickly. So I think more preparation is needed for, hey, how are we going to do this? Rather than tomorrow, oops, we need to close, someone's tested positive, we need to close, how are we going to talk to each other? Well, how are you going to train and work out issues and, you know, really do those user adoption activities that quickly? You're not, because you're going to be too busy worrying about how you allow VPN and who, you know, all this kind of stuff. I think you're going to be too worried about. So do it now. I think is kind of my guidance, but Teams is that tool of allowing you to do meetings, allowing you to have chat, continue those sharing documents with the back end of OneDrive and SharePoint. So allowing you to do all of that and keep your business running.
Yeah, exactly. That's the concern I have too, as you look at this advice, because we know that yes, it is very much down to helping people adopt and introduce them to the relevant features. You won't have that luxury if your doors have closed in 20, will be closing in 24 hours. So some of these links, they do go off to some default advice, which as you'd expect, of course, it's there, at least you've been pointed to it. But I think that the key thing, I just wonder if there's some way that we can address this is regarding 365. Is really like, you're not going to be able to get through a full program. You're not going to be able to get through full training and things. What are the key things that you can set up to get this thing going and cracking really quickly? Five key governance decisions around what are we going to do to keep our environment compliant and safe. If you've got a policy around external sharing, put that in place, that sort of thing. How are you going to quickly create a structure? It's not going to be perfect, but what a structure that is going to keep people in touch with the latest information so that they can make decisions and work together as a team. How are you going to bring what you can in terms of work that you're currently working on? And I think Phil there, maybe he means something else, but there is this concern that, you know, it's one thing to have working from home tools within Microsoft, but your line of business applications and things that would come over a VPN, are they sized and capable of taking the full load of everyone working from home? So lots of different things to think about, but I think there's definitely some things that can be done and decided. Again, it's not about perfection, it's about getting, you know, when a disaster happens, sometimes you do have to grab your bag and go, and you do your best. And it's not to say that don't think about security and compliance. Do definitely think about that, but don't look for a perfect information architecture. All right, the main thing is keeping people in touch, making these decisions to continue to work, and having a place where people can keep in touch with each other. One thing that really stuck with me when I looked at some early videos from Wuhan was people were kept in their homes, especially overnight. There was a curfew. And you know, I don't know if you remember that one that went viral where there were people calling out from the building and saying, be strong, be strong. And they're calling out of their windows and the whole city was that. That's what you actually will need as an organization to keep encouraging people along. So have that space. Anyway.
Yep.
Lots to talk about. Take a look at those resources for yourself. Think about your own business continuity plan and what you can do for the essentials. Maybe that should have been our headline. I was a bit indecisive, but our headline today is the OneDrive Sync version history, MC205517. This is where on the Windows desktop and on Mac. How about that for parallel release?
Yes,
you can,
I like it.
Manage your version history from the OneDrive client.
Yeah, and really, I think this harkens back in my mind, where if you remember, we had shares, network shares, and we could, if you set it up, you could actually right-click on files under network shares and say, I want to go back to a previous version, if they're Windows shares. And so this is kind of that functionality back to, I don't have to go into OneDrive, into the website, and say, I want to revert versions. I can do this in the client. So in my OneDrive Sync client, I can do it in Windows Explorer. I can do it in Finder and on the Mac. So I'm able to interact with that document and its previous versions without having to, oh, I need to do this, so I need to leave my normal place of working with my files in OneDrive and go somewhere else to interact with and try to restore a version. So I'm really liking the this ability. I really am, to be able to do that.
Faced this just yesterday. It was a question from someone in a team. They needed to roll back because it's the good old auto update. They hadn't turned it off and started changing the original instead of save as and continue. To be honest, like, this is good to have another option, but I often guide customers, look, you're in the document already,
right?
You're looking at it, use your version history within PowerPoint, Word, Excel, whatever.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. You can do that within PowerPoint, Excel, Word. You can go to version, and that's only if you have Office 365 Pro Plus, right? So if you're using OneDrive, but you're using some other version of Office, then you can't do that. But I agree if you're in it, but what if you're not in it and you make a change and someone says, oh, you know, this is the wrong version. Well, being able to revert back without having to open up that document is nice too, I think. So it's options, and I will see myself probably using this, but not using it as much as what you're describing, using version history within the document. So
gradually rolling out to customers mid-March, and rollout should be completed by the end of the month. We have multilingual publishing for modern SharePoint, MC205516. We have a friend who's going to help us do a deep dive on this, don't we?
Yeah, we're going to do a deep dive on this one because really it is, there's a lot to talk about here. We've had multilingual in SharePoint in the past. Some would say it's not great. And then now we've got modern, and what is the story about multilingual in modern, which modern is now, remember that, for publishing in modern SharePoint. So we're going to be doing a deep dive. So definitely check out the audio version of the podcast. Go to messagecenter.show and subscribe to the podcast so you'll get that audio. We'll be talking with a multilingual expert who has been really working in this space for a while. So we'll be doing that, and it'll be published this week.
So enabling the publishing and consumption of pages and news in multiple languages from SharePoint communication sites. There's a ability to assign your language expert for the different languages. You'll also get a notification if you're a multinational when someone is starting to try and access this content over their language, and so then you can make sure that the right person's on the job from your own team to do the translation.
Well, because there's many aspects to this. There's the giving users the capability to select their language, right, and to see your content. But there's the translating the language, because we can do it automatically with some Azure function, or you can use other services, but it's not going to be perfect. And so you're going to need someone who owns that content to go, okay, I need to tweak this in here to actually make it make sense and get the message across. But then you also need the ability to keep things in sync. How are you going to the process of keeping, you know, an English or a French or a Spanish, and how do you keep those in sync when you make an update to one, right? It needs to be made across the other languages too. So we'll be, like I said, deep diving into this, but I think this is a great step for organizations that are, many organizations are need a multilingual presence. They're becoming international. Here in the U.S., you just have to cross our northern border, and now you need a French version for Canada. So I think it's a lot more organizations are having to implement multilingual now.
Yeah, definitely. Just looking at some of the hints there too in the image there. Take a look at it for yourself, but a part where on the page you can see the different translations and when the draft was last updated. So you can cast your eye across that and see, oh, maybe Russian sort of lagging behind for this version of change. So we'll contact the right person. Let's keep moving along. We have something that I actually didn't know existed in Teams. That's not really unusual, actually, because there's a lot to it. Did you know you could you could at mention the word team or the word channel, and it would use the appropriate thing depending on your context where you currently are in Teams? You did? Oh, you went mute.
Did know this. Being able to do this, but it worked for the non-English users, I think is fantastic. Again, we're talking about working as a team with people who have a different language than English. So being able to at mention a channel or at mention a team and make it work, I think is great.
Yeah, so clever little tip there to just you know, at mention that channel or team and address the right audience. So a bit of a theme here today with multilingual. This is we have begun rolling this change out and expect to complete this by end of March. That's MC205585. And allow IT managers to pre-install apps, MC205752. This is apps for Microsoft Teams. We have seen this story building up a bit around being able to pin apps and push certain things out. And so now this is further into the story. As an admin, you might have applications that you want to make available front and center to everyone. So you can publish those and make sure that they are available underneath the ellipsis menu, if not on the bar itself.
Right.
Yeah, and they've got a few examples there. Contoso Companion.
I actually see this being used a whole lot more, or not more, but I see this being used a whole lot in the future. And not to plug my own stuff, but I will be actually doing a workshop where I'll talk about this a little bit in SP Fest Seattle later this year. But I'll be doing some other sessions as well, but talking about how this can be part of your, not just your intranet story, but your whole collaboration story. So I think this functionality is going to be something that's used widely.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you're trying to standardize that experience and have the tools in place. Wherever we need to rely on in users to open something, to install something, to read something, we can't depend on it if we want. Yeah, I know.
People do not read email. That's
no,
for sure.
But I mean, even here, people may not even read the at mention team. Hey team, yep. We'll be pinning this app that's going to be standard for everyone. It's a new app. Attend that training session. If you don't watch the video, you know, I can build the story
right
up.
Right.
It's there, it's pinned. Right, last one. This is you know, a really good news for orgs that are still in between and still communicating with customers that are using Skype Consumer. This is a new feature, Teams and Skype Consumer Chat and Calling Interop, where you might still need to communicate with your customers and they're using Skype. Then you can use Teams to Skype. That's MC205801. What else can we say about it? It is a policy you can flick on, external access,
yep.
Something we did have in Skype for Business, so it's now available in Teams.
That's right. And it's, I think the, it's rolling out end of March 2020. And then it completed hopefully by the end of April. I say hopefully because I think if you are a regular watcher of the show or you're regular watching the Microsoft 365 Admin Center and the Message Center, you will see there's quite a few messages that pop back up when they're edited, and they often will bold when they change things in the message, not all the time, but often will. And so we're seeing these pop up now where they're changing the rollout period. So not necessarily about this message itself, but keep an eye on messages that pop up and go, oh, I've already read that. Well, it may be that the timing is changing for the rollout. So you may need to keep an eye on that. But yeah, that's pretty much for this one. You don't need to do anything, it says. You might want to consider updating user training. Yes, I would agree with that. But yeah. Being able to have conversations from Teams to Skype Consumer.
That's right. Well, that's it for the week. There are a few things that dropped into the tech community. Whoopsie daisy. Just put up the notes all over your face there, Daniel. Sorry. Around the bookings and Teams. So there's a new article there. Check that out for new capabilities to empower healthcare organizations. Yep, the news is going to keep coming.
I think it's more than that. It's more than that, but it is, yeah, that's bookings app in Microsoft Teams. So take a look, take a read on that, and I'll be posting a link to that as well to Twitter for everybody to look at.
All right. So that was episode 1 through 5. Catch us again next week. Thanks to everyone who joined, and all the, a few new people there too. Hello, Epic Mo and Von Ski. Sorry that we didn't answer your questions in a timely fashion when you asked them, because there's a bit of a 30-second buffer or so. But yeah, Von Ski, when would we use the at mention or at team? Definitely when we're trying to get attention for our whole team. Could be done from any channel. Doesn't have to be the general. But yeah, I find that I use it occasionally, but I do use it sparingly.
Yeah, and the team is remember, we can create a team. It doesn't have to be the whole channel. So we can create a team that is a subset of those, so you can talk and make sure that you alert them. You don't have to alert the whole channel or alert the whole team.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, again, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Join us poolside and dive into the detail when we interview experts about upcoming updates and changes. And now, an audio podcast exclusive interview.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 365 Message Center Deep Dive. This week's episode, we're focusing on an announcement that was in the Message Center, the new feature of multilingual publishing for modern SharePoint. And today we have with us Sebastian. Hello, Sebastian.
Hello, Daniel. How's it going?
Doing well.
Amazing.
Thank you for being with me here today, Sebastian, to talk about this topic that I think you have a pretty good grasp on, being from where you are. And I'm just going to let you introduce yourself to everyone, and then I think everyone will understand why we have you on the show for this multilingual publishing. So will you please tell everyone who you are, please?
Definitely. My name is, I'm going to say it in French, actually. So my name is Sébastien Levert. I am an Office Dev MVP based out of Montreal, Canada. So I'm just putting emphasis on the French word, so it makes sense with the multilingual today. I've been doing SharePoint all my life, and multilingual is a huge aspect of any type of intranets or projects here, especially in the French-Canadian part of Canada, but also anything government here in Canada. And across the world, we see a lot of those projects here. I'm working for a company called Valo, where we even see more multilingual activities across all the continent. So I've been playing around these multilingual products back in the days for SharePoint, and now since 3 years in modern SharePoint, this was dead. We had really no good options around multilingual, and I'm finally really excited we can cover this in the Message Center, because it means it's there, so we're all happy about it.
Yes. Well, and I think for in the U.S., we when we have dealings with Canada, and organizations have I have clients who have factories and have plants and have offices in Canada, and so they are engaged with multilingual intranets. And then we also have clients that have facilities in Mexico or in South America. So we have Spanish and Portuguese there. So it is, I think, even for just this hemisphere, we have a lot of opportunity for utilizing multilingual. And that doesn't even count, you know, Europe and the rest of the world, where different languages are so close together in countries. So I think this is a growing topic as companies do expand into international operations. So thank you for joining us today. So in the Message Center, we have this announcement. This was MC205516, multilingual publishing for modern SharePoint. So this is, you know, as we know, most things are coming to just modern. What is this announcement about, Sebastian, and what is coming to us as part of this multilingual publishing?
So as part of this announcement, we're not just getting a tweak or not just getting a small bit of multilingual. We're actually getting a totally new feature as part of SharePoint Online, especially in the communication site aspect of SharePoint Online. So what we're getting is we're getting a new publishing model where it allows you to create pages, so regular modern SharePoint pages, in multiple languages. And the big aspect that is super important here is that everything can afterwards be synced together or linked together. So it means that if you are an English user, you would see the English page. But if you are a French user, you would see the French, and let me use the term here, the French variation of the page. So it means that it's really, you're going to see the French version of the same content, of the same story you wanted to tell in the English message, but you're going to see it in French or in Spanish or in Portuguese or in German.
Well, and so, I think that's kind of important, though, to understand that, Sebastian, and maybe talk a little bit about what that means. But is this is not just a we're talking about version of this and a holistic approach to creating content and not having to recreate things to the point where we've got all these different artifacts laying around in different languages, and but we're doing these versions basically of that language for that content, right?
Exactly. So think about how you edit a page today. You go in SharePoint, you do new page or new news post, and you communicate. You create your content. You're using whatever web parts you want to use, header images. And then once this is done, you will be able to create a page in other languages. As a site owner, you will be able to enable different languages on that site. So let's take a simple example. Here in America, French, English, and Spanish are probably the three most spoken languages. Actually, probably Portuguese is more. So let's go with the four. So French, English, Spanish, and Portuguese. And then as an organization or as a site owner, you decide, okay, I want all those four languages to be covered. There is no real aspect or real notion of a main language in SharePoint. You can start your journey in Portuguese or start your journey in English. But once you're done with your content, you will be able to say, I want to create a version or a variation of this page in French, in Spanish, in Portuguese. What's going to happen? It's going to create three new pages. For one of the first time ever in communication sites, Microsoft is pushing a folder-based information architecture. So each language will have its own folder in your site pages library. In there, you will see the French, the English, Portuguese, mm-hmm. and the Spanish, and each one will have one page. All these pages will be related to each other through some magic happening behind the scenes.
Magic.
Something that I don't think is exposed so far exactly how the connections are being made, mm-hmm. but at least all of those are there. And all of those, which is really important, all of those have different life cycles. So mm-hmm. you can go and change the English page without pushing changes to the others and vice versa. So it means that each page has its own life cycle. They're not, once it's created, they're not connected together afterwards. Well, they are connected together, but their versioning does not need right. to match.
And that's important to understand that it doesn't have to match. It can match in that because when you do create content or when you're modifying content, then those translators, those language managers or whatever you want to call them, get notified when that content is updated, right? So they're going to be knowing it's updated, but they don't have to take action. Maybe the change is needed for that version, that language, but it isn't needed for other languages. You know, there's not those updates that are not needed.
Think about a typo. A typo on a text doesn't mean that there was a typo in the French version of that text. Probably not, actually. Right. Probably, actually, there will be other typos that are not impacting English, right. For instance. So all of those different pages are different. Something really interesting is kind of a new role that is being made available for publishing, for multilingual publishing in SharePoint. So when you will enable a new language, you will have to identify what they call translators. So those translators will automatically be notified when a new content is available for them to translate. Mm. So what is happening when you have your content fully created in English? SharePoint will actually copy the entire content of this page to the three new pages in English. There's no automatic translation or machine translation happening here. It's all human translated. So as a translator, you will get a notification directly inside your email. You're going to get a nice email. You're going to be able to go in and translate the content of the page that was sent to you. That means maybe adding new web parts, translating the text content, maybe even changing some of the images, because sometimes you might have text in your images. So you will want to do that. And as soon as you're ready, you will be able to hit that publish button. And the final connection between those pages will finally be available. As long as those pages are in draft mode, nobody will actually know that there's a connected page to the English page. You will only see the English page. But as soon as a new language pops up, then the dropdown will become available for users to select and then move on to this new page.
Well, and I think a couple of things that you brought out there. One, it's not automatically translating. Now, it sure would be nice to start off with an automatic translation. We know, and hopefully everyone knows, but we know that, you know, a machine translation is not going to be perfect. It may not even be near perfect at all, but at least it would be a starting point. But that's not what we're getting. We're getting what you described as the content and the translator that would need to go in and do translation line by line, basically, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, and switching out images, like you said, in case they have text or, you know, maybe context needs to be different, things of that nature. So I think that is important to note. Now, that translator could take that content and paste it into a translation machine translation service and take it out and then do edits, right? So you could manually easily do that.
Definitely. You can go on either Google Translate or Bing Translate or Azure Cognitive Services, whatever. Even in certain industries, there's some specialized sites for automatic translation. So you might want to look for your own industry. But yes, you could do copy paste of the content, send that to automatic translation, bring it back, and then adjust it. Never forget to adjust the content, because it's never a great content in the end.
Well, and I think, and then the second thing that you brought out was this process of, I as a translator get this notification, I go in, do my translations, and then I publish it. And so that's kind of the flow. But we can also have page approvals, right?
Yes.
So that. And I have seen this in action working with a customer who had a French Canadian who they had a tag team. Basically, they would have two people looking at content to make sure, because one person was not from was, I believe, from France, and the other one was from Quebec. And so they think and speak a little differently, as you know, right? And so they tag teamed on things to make sure that they were doing it correctly for their coworkers and making sure that it was done. And so you could, if you had something like that, or if you were paying maybe a service or something to do your translation services, or and you wanted that extra layer of looking at those translations, you could have page approvals before they're published, right?
Definitely. Something to keep in mind, there is an industry standard in the way that you can kind of transfer an original content so it's getting translated and being sent back to you. SharePoint does not support it, so your translator needs to have access to SharePoint.
Right, exactly.
They really need to get inside your SharePoint environment to do the actual translation. There's no translating or translation packages, I think it's called, that is available. But the good news is that if you're using external people, you can also fully customize the page approval because it basically leverages a flow within Power Automate. So you want to do whatever you want. You want to maybe create a task for them in a planner or whatsoever. Everything is definitely available for you to customize. So your translation process can really match your organization needs on that. So that's, for me, that's super important because every single organization will have different steps in there. Some are really simple. Some it's the same person creating four times the content because they know the four languages, but sometimes it's way more complex. So in that case, page approvals kind of brings that gating system that you can put in place.
Well, and I think also for your processes may be simple most of the time, but then there may be some times when it needs to be complex too. If for instance, something is an announcement that has some legal backing, meaning there could be consequences for if a announcement is translated improperly or the what is trying to be said doesn't come across the right way. And so you may need to have a little more complex for those certain announcements. So just being flexible. And I think this procedure, the way this works, is flexible enough to say, I've translated this. I don't have to publish it yet. I can get someone else to look over it before I publish it. So it's so you do kind of have that stopgap of just because I, save this page doesn't mean it goes out to everyone and is totally available right now.
Exactly.
And I think the other point that I wanted to make is this is I have conversations with companies quite frequently, and there's a misunderstanding as to what multilingual is within the intranet, and it is assumed that it's a very fast, automatic translation with very few edits, and it just happens. Right? I publish a news page in a communication site, and then within 5 minutes, the French version will show up, right? Because that's, and that's not real world. In my experience, it's more like it may be a day or two, depending on workloads and all. I mean, it could be a while.
Definitely. Yeah.
So,
and it's important to keep in mind that this process, especially in organizations that don't have a dedicated editing team, that will that's not first priority sometimes. So that's why the system is built in a way that it can be fully async, as you don't have to wait for the French content to publish the English content. It doesn't have to be all there. And when it shows up, it shows up. So it is fairly important, though, to keep in mind that this will have a huge impact on the way that you process pages and news for multilingual sites, because it's going to add new work to your daily
process. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think so. It's nice, though, that your intranet is site visitors will automatically see those pages in their preferred language. So that's great. That's the experience we want. So once those news items are published in that language, they're going to be seeing that in their preferred language. I think we've talked a bit about the process for content owners or content creators, and then those translators, those language managers. But can we talk a little bit about the admin experience? Make sure that we understand what do admins need to do? You mentioned something about site owners turning things on or what. Let's talk a little bit about what is it for admins? What do we need to do as an admin to make this happen?
So the first thing, let's just take a step back. The way I see multilingual sites today is for very specific functions in the organization. So anything collaboration, for me, it's a big no-no. Don't enable multilingual on team sites or whatsoever. I think it doesn't match the mindset of multilingual. So first, there's kind of an organization that needs to happen, a requirements gathering initially that needs to be there to understand which sites you really need the multilingual feature. So that's from an admin perspective, that's the first thing that needs to happen. Second thing is, once you identify the sites that requires multilingual, in the language settings of the site, so in the site information panel, you will be able to go to the site settings, and in there you're going to find language settings. In that language settings, you will enable multilingual for this specific site. And there, by default, you're going to enable this, and it's going to just use the current default language of the site as the only available language.
Okay.
Then the question you need to ask yourself is, which languages should we support with this site? It's not because your organization has 12 different spoken languages that you need to support those 12 ones. You need to really pay attention to the ones that you want to communicate officially to your employees.
So there's legal, and then there's also cultural, right?
Yes.
Like you said, it may be, you may have 12 languages, you know, Hungarian and all these different types, right? But it is culturally, what is spoken? What languages are used in your communications in your organization? What is expected, right? What is the norm for your organization, right?
Exactly. And once you know that, then it's easier to enable the languages based off that norm that you know. So now you will basically enable French and Spanish and Portuguese on top of the English language, which in our case would be the default language. And you will assign a set of translators. Now, these translators, I think they need some guidance. They need a little bit of help to understand what does it mean. And also from the person that creates the initial content, I think there has to be kind of a process that needs to happen between the initial creation and translation and updating all of those. This is not something that SharePoint does handle that by default. It's not an issue. But I think now it becomes an organization process where you need to make sure that these are that you open up the communication for these people. Maybe you're creating a team in Microsoft Teams for all translations around your intranet. So at least people can notify people, hey, I'm about to update this. This is business critical. We need to have it updated in all the languages. So it becomes really important to understand when and what and who should be part of this process. But after these, enabling, selecting the languages, and highlighting the translators, everything else magically, if I can say, just happens naturally. So now the content will be available in any of those languages. And will be able to be created from either language that is supported this site.
And I really appreciate you bringing that last point that you made there about using a technology to make sure that you are enabling your translators and the rest of the people that are involved here in the process. And using Microsoft Teams is one way that you could do that in making sure that people are communicating about what needs to be done. Is there changes that issues that have been alerted to say, hey, someone found an issue on the translation on this page, you know, those kind of things, to be able to just not only document what is being said and what issues need to be fixed, but, you know, quickly taking action on that, making sure that the purpose of the post is not lost in translation. Snap. All right. Awesome. So is there anything else that we haven't covered on multilingual publishing for modern SharePoint, do you think?
I think there's one last thing that I feel is a great and a little bit dangerous at the same time. But it's the ability. So you know how you build those home pages in SharePoint? You drag and drop a highlighted content web part on a page, and you configure it to bring the latest news, for instance. Mm-hmm. The beauty of multilingual is that automatically, when multilingual is enabled in a specific site, those web parts would automatically dedupe the content. That meaning that it will roll out, it will roll up the content based on your preferred language or a content that is not available in your preferred language. For instance, if I am browsing and I have French as my preferred language, I would see all the French content plus all the English content that was not translated to French. So from an end user perspective, they might start to actually see content in multiple languages based on the way that you have put your process in place and how quick you deploy those language pages. So it's something to keep in mind, because maybe someone from the French office does not really, or is not super good at reading English, but still they will see that content. So it's something to keep in mind for the end users also, that they might start seeing content in the corporate global language, whatever that means, but they will start to see content in multiple languages in those rollups.
And I think that is really important, especially for organizations that might have separate intranets, separate sites that are servicing as multiple languages, right? So they may have a French site, and you know, like in classic SharePoint, and a English site and a German site, and they sync content manually, right? Yep. And so I, as a French user, yes, I use this French website, or as a German user, I use this German language SharePoint site, and everything is in German until they translate whatever the item is into German and then post it on my site. I don't see any other content. But now with going to modern, and we're trying to, you know, we want that one page experience.
Yep.
We might see multiple languages, and this is just something you're going to have to, like you said, communicate and have people understand that they may see that default language until it gets translated. And maybe if that's a big deal, then you as an organization may need to put a more focus on this service. And maybe you do need to transition to someone to having more of their job be translating items, if it really is that important, right? To have that content translated quickly. That's a great point.
That's how you're going to get, I think, the best experience possible from the multilingual features of SharePoint Online.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. I appreciate your time today. Can you tell us, the listeners, how they can connect with you on the internet?
So if you have access to the interwebs, you can definitely reach out to me either on Twitter, so at Sebastian Levert in one word, or through my blog, sebastianlevert.com. Those are probably the two easiest way, or let's meet up in any of the upcoming conferences, SharePoint Fest and SharePoint Conference, and feel free to ping me and let's have a chat or a coffee.
Again, thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We appreciate it. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast at messagecenter.show so you can hear great interviews like we just had with Sebastian. Thank you again, Sebastian.
You're welcome. Cheers, everybody.